Argument today is 21-1988, Vicentin versus United States. Mr. Spack, please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Greg Spack. May it please the court. I'm from the law firm of White & Case, and I'm here on behalf of LDC Argentina and its U.S. affiliate. With me today is my colleague, Jessica Lynn. This appeal involves two adjustments in an anti-dumping calculation. And it's an adjustment to both sides of the equation. On the U.S. side, which I'll refer to as export price, the Commerce Department took the price negotiated between the parties and reflected on the commercial invoices, and then reduced it for what it considered to be an embedded value of something called a RIN, which we'll get into. On the other side of the equation, the normal value calculation, and it's important to remember that normal value was based on the producer's cost. On the normal value side...
Mostly on the producer's cost.
The
soybeans were not, in fact, that were used, were a surrogate value.
The concept was that it was a cost-based normal value, Your Honor,
right.
Yes.
Okay.
But as we'll talk about, they take that out and replace it with something that they consider to be non-distorted. So as a result of these two adjustments, one on each side, we get a 60% dumping margin. Had the Commerce Department used the prices reflected in the negotiation and reflected on the invoice and used the producer's cost, we would have a 0% dumping margin. So these two adjustments matter. I'd like to spend some time on each then. First, the adjustment to the export price for the RIN. So this issue arises because biodiesel in the United States has a different value than it would have in many other parts of the world. The market just values it for more as more. And why is that? It's because Congress created a value in the market. It created, through the Renewable Fuels Act, an obligation for so-called obligated parties.
Can I just
yes.
get to what is troubling me about this adjustment? And let's just assume that it actually, the RIN does have a separate value, and it's severable, and we can determine what it is. I know
yes,
you disagree not. With all that. But if that's the case, is your view that Commerce doesn't have the legal authority under its current statutory and regulatory scheme to make that adjustment?
It's my view that they need to follow the statute, and the statute says that they have to use the price that's used between the parties and reflected between the parties. The point here, Your Honor, is that...
I'm not sure that's answering my question,
I'm
though,
sorry.
Because if we assume that the RIN has a value,
yeah.
then that means that it's a separate value in apart from the biodiesel. And so the biodiesel in your home market has a price. We can assume it has the same, even for the purposes of this argument, we can assume it has the exact same price and you were selling in the US market.
Yeah.
But it also includes this additional value of the RIN in the U.S. market. So to do the apples for apples comparison, you've got to get rid of that RIN. That's Commerce's position.
Yeah.
And that makes sense at a high level, given
right.
what we know, what you do in anti-dumping context,
right.
is that's the value you're trying to get, this apples for apples. But what I'm having a hard time figuring out is exactly where that authority can be located in the statute or the price adjustment regulation.
Yeah, we don't think it's there because, again, the statute defines export price as the price that for which the product is first sold, and that means this court has said it's very clear what sell means and what are the indicia of selling. I would say, Your Honor,
I took the Commerce's principal position to be incredibly simple. The subject merchandise mm-hmm. is biodiesel. What you sold and included in your price was a dual product, biodiesel plus something of nifty value to your purchaser, this thing that EPA is going to give them a chip that they can cash in. or sell to somebody else. And so what they need to do is to figure out what price you actually sold only one piece of it at, the biodiesel. And on the evidence here, they could say, and they say there is substantial evidence to say, we're going to value the chit at the market price for the chit, nothing else.
Your Honor, if that were correct, if LDC were really selling two things, what would those two things be? They'd be a RIN, and they'd be some sort of thing, a biodiesel that doesn't generate the RIN, right? If we're going to disaggregate it and say there are two things, we can't just talk about the RIN and then say that it's biodiesel, it also includes the RIN. And the point is that LDC never exports to the United States biodiesel that doesn't generate a RIN. It only produces and exports the biodiesel that the market recognizes as having this additional value
What I'm wondering about is why this isn't essentially a factual issue on which you simply did not establish you didn't put in enough evidence to make Commerce's determination unreasonable, that in fact you built into the dollar value price of this dual product the entirety of the market value of these RIN, of the RINs.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And you could have, and maybe in the next case you can, but that here you didn't.
I'd respectfully disagree, because there's only one piece of evidence we have, which is the value that's reflected on the invoice. It's not as if the companies have any kind of accounting value for the RIN. They in Argentina don't generate a RIN. They can only produce and export biodiesel. They do it a certain way, right?
That makes it eligible for
correct.
The RIN. So it's not like you're just, this is happenstance. You're doing it intentionally. You're producing it in a way that makes it eligible for the RIN. So
yes,
when you're
right.
selling it, you're not just selling generic biodiesel that you could sell anywhere. You're selling RIN-eligible biodiesel because you understand that the American market wants it sold that way.
You're absolutely right, Your Honor. And getting back to your apples-to-apples comparison, that's why we think what the statute really tells you to do in this case
again, the apples to apples.
Yes.
If you sold that same product in the Argentinian market, the RIN has no value. So there is no, because you don't have that. So the biodiesel fuel doesn't include that added value of the RIN. So why isn't it the case that under the regime here that Commerce gets to deduct the value of the RIN to make
right.
that apples per apples comparison? I mean, economically, it just makes sense, right? I mean, if you sell something in the United States for $100 and they're getting a tax credit of $20, but you know, you sell it at a different price, it may look like you're not dumping, because in Argentina, you don't have that value, but because of the tax credit, you are dumping.
Yeah.
Why can't they legally address that under the statute and the price adjustment regulation?
Well, the price adjustment regulation, first of all, talks about a change in price, right? A change that's agreed between, I think, implicitly.
Well, okay, I get that. I have some issues with that too, which
right.
I'll be asking your friends on the other side about. But why isn't the basic statutory regime, which talks about adjusting for the product sold,
right.
and the product sold here, there are two different products, aren't there? There's the U.S. product, which is the biodiesel and the RIN, and the Argentine market, it would just be the biodiesel.
And in a normal case, where you had two different products, what would Commerce do? It would compare the prices as sold, and it would make a difference in merchandise adjustment, that is, the difference in the cost to produce the two different products, right? And that's what we're saying. If you want an apples-to-apples comparison, especially since your normal value is based on cost, then take the value for what it is in the United States as agreed between the buyer and seller, and go ahead and make an adjustment for those additional costs that were required to produce that value.
But is the adjustment limited just to cost of production, or is it limited to other things?
Well,
because I mean, I assume you're not disputing that the RIN has some economic value and it could mask dumping.
Well, I mean, I, I'm I concede that it has value. It has a value because it can be traded in a different market. Could it mask could it mask dumping? I would say what it means is that the market gives it a higher value, gives the biodiesel a higher value because of the value that's created only in this market.
So you could sell that biodiesel in the United States at a price that appears to not be below home market value because the RIN adds additional value. But if you were actually comparing just the pure cost of the biodiesel without the RIN, it would be dumping.
I don't see it that way, Your Honor. I understand the economic argument.
Yeah.
But remember,
what's wrong with that, though?
Well,
the price in Argentina is $100, mm-hmm. and you sell it for $110 in the U.S., that looks like you're not dumping because you're selling it above home value.
Yeah.
But if you're selling it for $110 in the U.S. because the U.S. customer is going to get a $30 tax credit and they know it and you manufacture that price, then isn't it really you're selling at $80 and you are dumping?
Yeah. Well, again, I think one of the other things we have to be careful here, Your Honor, respectfully, is that LDC never gets this tax credit or this benefit from selling the RIN. All it does is it sells the
biodiesel. No, but you get the benefit of pricing the product in a certain way because your American market knows that it's going to get it. I mean, that has to be true because if you didn't care about the credit, you wouldn't be manufacturing it in a way that was eligible for the credit.
Well, I'd manufacture it in a way to access the market, right? And so if the market values were significant enough to give me an economic incentive to do it, I would. And I, you know,
Can I ask you this? If we find that the price adjustment regulation is just talking about something else, can we still find that the statute itself is sufficient to do this? I think Commerce makes a theory that what we're looking at, they're separating out this as a separate product. So when they're making the adjustment is, I know you disagree with
right,
all of that, but is that a way to look at the statute as a source of authority without getting to the regulation? Or do we have to determine that the regulation, even though it seems to deal with something different, is sufficiently broad to cover it?
Well, again, we believe that the statute is pretty clear in terms of what the price is, the price of the product. And I would say that the product happens to be enhanced because of this feature. Thank you.
You're into your rebuttable time, but before you move on, can I just ask you about the second issue?
Yes, Your Honor.
If we determine that Commerce has shown with substantial evidence that there's no double counting here, do we have to get into any of this messy legal argument about whether Congress can do a double remedy for countervailing duties and anti-dumping duties? If there's no double remedy, what makes the difference?
Right.
I know you disagree with that too,
right.
But let's just assume the substantial evidence supports Commerce's assertion.
Yeah.
Then we don't have to reach any of those legal issues, do we?
If you were to find that there's no double remedy, then we don't have an argument, I would say, under that.
I think this is relevant. Either for purposes of annual reviews, as this goes forward, assuming mm-hmm. that you stay under an anti-dumping order.
Right.
Has there been a liquidation of the period of review here?
There have been no imports since, remember, because you had the two dumping and countervailing duties of 140%.
So you just stopped.
No imports.
I see.
Yeah. It's shut down trade.
But assuming that you brought something in, and there was the annual review, 1675 or something,
right.
Would you be entitled to put on more evidence than you did in this proceeding about whether there was in fact a pass-through so that the question of whether the existence or not of pass-through matters as a matter of law might be useful to decide? Maybe not necessary, but useful because it would affect whether a different factual record produce a different legal conclusion.
Your Honor, if there were a review, then I assume we'd have the opportunity to provide all the evidence necessary. Again, we believe that the evidence, because of the nature of normal value in this case, we can see the impact of the subsidy. It's in exactly the same depressed cost of the soybeans that is the countervailing duty corrects for.
You said you concede it?
We can see it. We can see it for that reason. So we don't need to look at the U.S. price, which was one of our problems with the whole pass-through analysis.
Okay.
So with that, I'd like to reserve
have any rebuttal time, but I'll restore some of it. Don't worry.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Kirkland? Is it the remote advocate? Yes. There you go.
Yes,
sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. Am I set to go?
Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. The main issue before the court does boil down to an issue of civil fairness, consistent with the statute's fundamental directive to commerce to perform a fair comparison between normal value and export price. NP is disinterested in the proceedings that the Congressional Research Service recognized that RINs are a commodity with their own separate value, and the record shows, and in fact, footnoted this ubiquitous awareness about RIN values in the industry. Hence, the invoice price or the reported price that LDC is reporting to commerce includes not one different price for biodiesel, as counsel suggests, but two different components, biodiesel plus the value of the RIN. And this is what the trial court discussed at page 1240 and 1241 of its decision. There's pretty significant evidence on this issue that we discussed at page 2426, but we're going to get into those issues specifically.
Counsel, can I just ask you, I mean, I think I don't have any real doubt that there's any economic impact of the RINs. There certainly is. This seems like a very unusual circumstance, because usually when we're talking about price adjustments, we're talking about things that are agreed to as an adjustment between the buyer and the seller, and not, you know, adjustments that occur due to, you know, the home country's environmental laws. And so the price adjustment regulation in particular doesn't seem particularly pertinent to that. And it seems a stretch to rely on that. And I guess my question is, do you think the underlying statute is good enough, or is this just an area that Congress never thought to cover, and that if we want to cover environmental subsidies, then it has to be, you know, a more explicit statutory authorization than the definitions of export price and constructed export price?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the statute itself is good enough because it refers to the price at which the subject merchandise is first sold, and that is one of the interpretations to require commerce to look at the starting price for the subject merchandise, not simply the reported price. I mean, it is well understood in this area of law that commerce makes all kinds of adjustments to the reported price, or I guess you could say invoice price, in order to arrive at the starting price for the subject merchandise. But I would be remiss, Your Honor, if I did not say that the price adjustment regulation also very much covered this situation. And that is because the price adjustment regulation itself, this is 19 CFR 351.102 subsection B38, refers to a change in the price charge, again, for the subject merchandise for the farm product relevant here, such as a discount, rebate, or other adjustment. That was a 2016 amendment, which we're going to get to shortly. And goes on to say that anything that, quote, reflects, that is reflected in the purchaser's net outlay. So that very much matches up with Your Honor's example of the tax rebate example, very colloquially with our opponent. This is precisely something that is ultimately affecting the purchaser's net outlay. And when Congress amended this regulation in 2016, it did so explicitly to make clear that, I think in the spirit, that it cannot possibly recognize all the types of situations that might arise that would lead to a price adjustment, the type of things that affect the purchaser's net outlay. And therefore, not only added the four other adjusted language, I believe that was added in 2016, but made very clear, and now I'm looking at the modification of price adjustments from that amendment, which is at 81 Federal Register 15.604. A price adjustment is not just limited to discounts or rebates, decided that these type of determinations, these type of regulations, it comes up in the scope context all the time, right? This court possibly said Commerce has to define the scope in broad terms, but you can't possibly anticipate all the goods or situations that might come up. Now, it's a bit, Your Honor, that the same type of issue is going on here, and Commerce made explicit that it was putting out a broad regulation that handled a broad kind of situation. And we've seen that come up in the case law. I mean, the Kohler case that we cited in our brief is a good example, also the one that led to this particular modification. But there, what was going on was that the exporter was not doing anything to the invoices, but was by fiat giving after the fact rebates. I understand that's not the same as the differences that were going on between.
Well, I mean, that's my my issue here is that this just seems so unique because it's not an adjustment that's made by either, you know, the seller or the purchaser or any kind of agreement between the two of them. It's an adjustment that's caused by, you know, a separate foreign, you know, the home market country. And is there any kind of analogous case or anything like that? It seems like every single adjustment, shipping costs, rebates, they're all things that are controlled by the seller in some sense, or negotiated between the seller and the purchaser. And this just isn't that.
Well, I think it's, in the first instance, as a factual matter, we would take issue with LDC's characterization that this isn't negotiated at all between the purchaser and the seller. But I think the record is pretty clear that this is all over the contract documentation and even the offer, counteroffer. I mean, it's all specifying that these have to include RINs, that it's RIN inclusive biodiesel. So your view is
that even though it's not set out separately, it's clear that because of the way this is produced and the requirements for it to comply with the RIN requirements, that it's understood that what they're selling is not just biodiesel, but biodiesel that's eligible for the RIN credit, and those two are have separate economic value.
That's right, and I'm going to cite also record places where you can see this, Your Honor. I'm thinking of Commerce's explanation, pages 94 and 95 of the record, where they said, maybe the right description that is embedded here. It's an upper adjustment that's already included in the reported price because they are selling two things. And then there's also documentation. I'm not sure that the contracts themselves are in the record, but I would point Your Honors to page 24607 of the record, which is the other respondent's verification report, as well as the submission that's at page 24858-59 and note 19 of the record. And these are all places where the record discusses how it's included in the contract documentation. I mean, it would be a terrible rule for this court to set to tell exporters that as long as you don't discuss it explicitly in the invoice, then it's not part of the transaction, or it's implicit, and so it's not something that Commerce can make an adjustment about.
Can I ask this? Suppose LDC had, you know, a $100 price for some number of units in Argentina, and it sold to the U.S. importer, the first unaffiliated purchaser, at $100, did not up the price at all, not a cent, notwithstanding the fact that its U.S. buyer gets this extra value from the EPA, let's call it. What would happen?
I think that's the precise scenario that Judge Hughes was laying out earlier, where it's effectively mass food dumping, and that's what's going on here.
So I'm sorry. So that on that theory, whether the U.S. the export price from in that scenario from LDC had embedded in it a value for the U.S. customer wouldn't matter at all. Because on that theory, right, the U.S. customer is paying dollars or whatever to LDC at exactly the same price that LDC is selling in Argentina, but it gets this nifty extra benefit. Aren't those two fairly dramatically different rules?
I think those are two very different rules in the two countries and what necessitates the price adjustment. Because according to record evidence here, what they are not buying is biodiesel for $100 in the United States, but they're actually buying biodiesel for $80 and a RIN for $10 or $20, whatever the number is.
Can I also ask this and just help me understand this? The U.S. customer that is the first sale to an unaffiliated party is somebody who wants to use the fuel. Is that presumably right? Maybe not use it. Somebody who wants the fuel in hand for use or otherwise. Here's what I guess I'm trying to understand. Who are the competitors of LDC? The domestic competitors. A domestic producer of biodiesel, as I understand it, itself gets the chit from EPA, right? Its customers are presumably the same customers for whom LDC, the foreign producer, is competing. And yet, those seem to be radically different situations because the customer, when buying from the foreign company, is the one that gets the money, whereas the customer, when buying from the domestic producer, doesn't get the RIN, doesn't get anything, any RIN of value. There seems a kind of, I'm trying to understand the economics and whether this has something to do with the economics in terms of what this statute is all about protecting domestics against a certain kind of behavior from the foreign company.
So I understand, Your Honor, but the focus of the anti-dumping statute is on, you know, the basic comparison between the normal value and the export price. At a gut level, I'm doubtful that there is an issue there in terms of what the domestics do versus what the foreign do, but that ultimately is not the dumping analysis. The statute directs commerce to determine whether they're selling it here cheaper than they're selling it in their own country. And the adding the RIN into it, even when the customers all say that we recognize that if we're buying $100, $10 of that is actually the value of the RIN.
Okay, let me turn back a little bit to what I guess I'm trying to focus on. If LDC is selling in Argentina $100, and that's, you know, that's the sort of its exact economic cost, and now it turns around and sells for $100 the same stuff in the U.S., and you have, so that there hasn't been anything added at all, not anything added to the price or the product, do you or do you not say that the fact that the customer gets some tax credit from the U.S. government or the RIN makes that $100 price somehow too high? Without any of the evidence that you pointed to about embedding this extra value.
Right. We would say that the $100 price would be too low, again, because they are really not paying $100 for the biodiesel. They're paying less than that, and that is consistent. It is certainly not uncommon for dumping to be people making sales below their cost in the United States as an unfair or predatory trade practice.
The $100 is too low, meaning you're going to up the export price? That's not going to help.
No, in other words, the $100 value, I'm not sure how to characterize it, but the $100 value is too high in the sense that that's not the actual price at which the subject merchandise is first sold, because they're not just selling the subject merchandise, they're selling the subject merchandise plus a separate commodity with a well-known published value that brokers are publishing the value of that commodity. And so they're not actually selling biodiesel for $100, they're selling the biodiesel for some number less than that, that's too low compared to their price in their whole market, plus that commodity
Mr. Kurland, you've used up all your time and all of Mr. Gatlin's time, so let me allow Mr. Gatlin to have 2 minutes, please.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Miles Gatlin of Cassie Levy Kent, representing the Nationwide Diesel Board Fair Trade Coalition. I appreciate you allowing me a couple minutes of time here. Just to maybe close a thought on the RINs issue here, Judge Taranto, you mentioned, isn't it simple or straightforward to Mr. Speck here, two products. The key here in terms of the two products, and Judge Hughes, you referenced two different products as well, and that is the reality here. There are two different products, two different items of value that were covered by the invoice price here. And the key under the statute and the regulation is that that one of those items is non-subject merchandise. The scope of this order of the investigation covered biodiesel, a fuel. There is no reference in the scope to RINs, and the record is clear that RINs have a separate value. They're a separate commodity. They are not subject merchandise. And therefore, under the statute alone, Commerce would not only have the authority, but should be required to exclude the value of the non-subject item. The regulations permit that as well and link up to the statute perfectly by referencing subject merchandise. I'll turn to, and
there's... Can I just one question? And I'm sorry, this is sort of, one of the things that I've had a little bit of trouble understanding and even formulating, but it's not clear to me that on the domestic side of what Mr. Stack called the equation, not the normal value in home country, but on the in the U.S. side, the word that's used is not value, it's price. Mm-hmm. Why does it matter in terms of the price being that the customer has a pretty great extra value from making that purchase provided by a third party?
I refer back to the statutory language of subject merchandise. It's not just any price. It's the price of the subject merchandise. And here, RIN value, RINs, are a distinct commodity as recognized by the congressional...
Okay, all right, so that's...
Okay,
if I may,
just for a moment, on...
Can I ask you one thing about the other question? And I don't think anybody has made anything of this, but this is in terms of the pass-through and
yes.
The tax. When I look at... This is appendix page 34. This is on some page or other of the... the commerce redetermination from November of 1220. Oddly enough, the original page numbers were stripped out of this document, so it's impossible to follow. But on page 34 of the appendix, the first full paragraph, two-thirds of the way down, as the record demonstrates, LDC and Vicentin price their U.S. shipments in a manner designed to compete with, parenthesis, or undercut U.S. prices for petrodiesel and biodiesel. And I guess what that, nobody made anything of this, but it seemed to me pretty central to what Commerce said on this issue of pass-through, that LDC here is in some way using a market price of heating oil or something like that under, it says something like, we base our prices on, or contracts that base on. If the concern of the anti-dumping laws here is underpricing, undercutting, I would guess that the contracts that LDC has about using the heating oil say we won't charge more than that, but don't prohibit it from charging less than that. And if that's possible, then how do we know there's no pass-through?
Well, really what the statute, Your Honor, speaks to is when it talks about underpricing, it's pricing relevant to normal value, the U.S. price compared
the
to normal value.
The pass-through analysis, as I understand it, is that there was this subsidy from the government of Argentina with respect to soybean prices, and we're imposing a countervailing duty on that. And the question is, what does LDC do with that subsidy? Does it show up in a too low price, export price in the U.S.? And Commerce said, no, it doesn't. And that's because LDC says, we're going to use this market value of heating oil on certain exchanges or something, as a basis for the price. But if what those contracts say is we won't charge more than that, that doesn't imply LDC is not charging less than that, i.e. undercut, in which case it would pass through.
Right, but the past, Commerce's pass-through analysis is focused on the U.S. price. Frankly, any language on undercutting or overpricing would be irrelevant to the pass-through analysis, because what Commerce is looking at in its pass-through analysis is whether there is a link, a relationship between LDC's cost of production or respondent's cost of production in the home market and the U.S. prices at which it sells. And there, the record is filled with evidence, both from LDC's and the other mandatory respondents' comments at verification and their sales documentation, that their prices in the U.S. market are not tied to their cost of production, but rather to a reference price in the United States on whether it's heating oil, which is diesel fuel, the NYMEX pricing, or soy oil futures in the United States under the Chicago Board of Trade Index, nothing to do with the costs in the home market. And that is corroborated by the other evidence.
Is that just a failure proof? Because it seems really hard, just as a matter of economics, to think that if they're getting this huge subsidy on soybean production, that's not somehow factoring into the price. I get that Commerce found that that wasn't here and that there may be substantial evidence to support that, but it certainly doesn't seem to make a lot of sense in terms of like just common sense of how pricing would work.
Well, how they're pricing their products, I think it just depends on the market and their own company decisions. Commerce, it's not as if Commerce was cobbling together a theory here. Their determination was based on LDC's own statements at verification of how they price their products. So, and corroborated by further evidence in the record from the ITC reports and testimony in the record. So, we would submit that, Commerce's adjustment here was lawful. If I could add one word on
legal... Mr. Gatlin, you're way over your time. You can't add any more words.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor. Can I ask how much time I have, more or less?
How about we'll say give you your whole 5 minutes, because
okay.
He went over by so much.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I'm frankly astounded at this subject merchandise argument. This scope was very clear from the beginning of the case. They filed a petition on biodiesel. Biodiesel sold in the United States. Biodiesel sold in the United States, as they know very well, generates RINs. So there's no question about there being two different pieces of merchandise here. It is the biodiesel that they included in their petition and for which Commerce sought information. So it is not true that the petition separates and somehow it says we're only going, this case is only about biodiesels, but not the kind that generates RINs. So they knew what the subject merchandise is, biodiesel, including the biodiesel that generates RINs, which is what is sold in the United States. So that's the thing. I think that's a very, and I get to this. I know Your Honors are bothered by the fact that there's some value. There's some economic value. But, you know, products often have a different value in one market than they do in the other because of perception. I happen to be Italian, and I love Italian cheeses. I'll pay more for Italian cheeses here than Italians will. And we'll do that because I perceive that it has a higher value. But that doesn't mean when there's a dumping case against Italian cheeses that somehow the Commerce Department has to say, well, wait a minute, this guy is assigning more value to it, so I've got to somehow do a price adjustment to get back to what the cheese should cost, right? The same thing we can talk about product alterations, product features. We use the example in our brief about a refrigerator case. Refrigerators come in with all sorts of different bells and whistles these days, computer screens, everything else. What does Commerce do in those cases? They compare the merchandise, and if there is a difference in the feature, they make the merchandise of sale adjustment based on cost. And that's what the statute would require them to do if they wanted to do something in this case. Now, Your Honor's asked also, is the statute enough? Do they really need the price adjustment regulation? I'd say the statute is not enough because the statute doesn't have a catch-all phrase that says, and any other adjustment that you might think is embedded in the price. The statute says export price means, and constructed export price means the price at which the product is first sold, and it allows for adjustments by saying, with additions in this sense and reductions in this. And there's nothing like what Commerce has done here. So the statute is not enough, which is why Judge Kelly sent it back twice to get an explanation of where they were getting this authority or she sent it back once, where they were getting their authority to adjust the value or the price. And the answer was, well, it's this price adjustment because the price adjustment regulation says I can account for other things. But I think Judge Hughes' questions are appropriate in the sense that that's not what that regulation is about. That's about when the buyer and the seller agree that there ought to be some modification through a rebate, through a discount. The Kohler example that the government uses is perfect. The buyer and seller agree to
give... Does the rebate or the discount have to come from the seller, though?
It could be just negotiated between the parties.
In this case, you could view the American tax credit as a built-in rebate. And so when you're selling it to the U.S. customer, you're selling it knowing that they're going to get a rebate.
Well, if I may, Your Honor, look, if that were the case and somehow it said that everybody gets a rebate, you know, maybe we could dress this up as a rebate, but that's not the case here, right? Important.
I don't understand that. Are you saying that some of your sales into the U.S. aren't rent eligible?
What I mean by that, Your Honor, is that a buyer and seller may not need RINs, right? Some of the purchasers here, and this goes to the questions earlier, some may have all the RINs they need. Right, and so it's not as if there is one market value for a RIN that applies in every transaction. If I'm a buyer and I don't need any RINs, I'm going to pay less for the biodiesel because I don't need it.
Well, I don't want to go down this road, but if they don't need the RIN, can't they sell it?
They could at a different price, right? So what's happening though? But that could also affect the price at which they're purchasing the biodiesel, and I think that's the essence of the problem here. Commerce is really taking a spot market price for RINs and looking at individual transactions for all these sales and saying, you know what, we need to adjust this. And we don't think they can. And with that, I think my time is up, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Speck. We thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.